back in on Canuck Central this hour, brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. This one from Velvet Elvis in Kelowna. I was listening to my favorite Canucks radio show yesterday, and one of my favorite broadcasters was talking down to the Garland Gnome. Instant karma gotcha.
Certainly did. Certainly did right away, man. It was awesome.
Garland with a couple of goals last night after...
When was the last time you saw Garland snipe?
Last night, actually. All right. Let's bring in our next guest covering the Abbotsford Canucks as play-by-play. It's Brandon Astle. Thanks for this, Brandon. How are you?
Dan, Sat, doing well. I just got the NFL Combine going on and TV on my TV here in the background. They got the big men running today, and I was wondering, so the slowest guy is a defensive tackle, 5.39 with his 40 time. Do you think he could beat that?
Oh, I know I could beat it. I know.
Yeah?
I got a 4.940. Yeah. This is like
Okay, I think I got to see that.
No, yeah, I think we got to see it as well, because it happened at...
There's tape somewhere, I don't know.
Dan, you got a low center of gravity, yeah. I believe it, actually.
We had the Sportsnet Olympics. It was like Sportsnet Day. This is like how
Sportsnet
long
Sportsnet 650 Sports Day. I think it was 2018.
2018 is like 7 years ago.
I don't know if I still got a 4.940 in me today.
I definitely don't think you do. But even I even question if you did back then, because Art Factora was on the stopwatch, and
nobody. I don't know. Everybody saw it. It was great. Just ask Randeep. You know, he was eating my dust when we were doing the 40 yard dash. What combine event do you think you would excel at the most, Brandon?
You're
a three cone drill guy, vertical
agility,
jump.
Yeah, they do the cones back and forth, up and down, and the receivers catch the ball right at the end. I feel like. I've always been a good receiver in the backyard games and a safety. I played both, and I feel like my agility is probably one of the biggest assets in a pickup play game.
I think if we gave you an invite to the Sportsnet 650 long drive contest, you'd probably win that too.
I haven't picked up a club in 4 months, so I don't know about that right now.
It's between you and Bruff. I don't know. We'd have to figure it out. Maybe another day. Brandon Astle, our guest here on Canuck Central. So the Abbotsford Canucks on a bit of a losing run here, but we know Jonathan Lekromäki is still doing his thing and scoring goals. What have you seen from the highly touted Canucks prospect lately on the season now, 18 goals in 30 games?
Yeah, he just continues to be, like, overall steady. Nothing seems to rattle him, and that's what I admire most about Lekromäki, because you see it a lot in the AHL when a kid that was a high draft pick comes in, maybe expects to be handed some things and doesn't happen right away. It can be a bit of a tough pill to swallow, and the next thing you know, you're in your own head, second-guessing yourself. You're in a new environment. Things can kind of start to spiral on you. Whereas for Lekromäki, he almost walks around like he's on a PTO. The kid works so hard at his craft and doesn't take anything for granted, and obviously, he's very gifted offensively. 18 goals, like you mentioned, lead the team. And just the way he operates in the opposition end of the rink is why he was taken so high by Vancouver. But it's still the little things that he wants to continue to get better at and leading to success in the box score. I know plus-minus can be a flawed stat. I'm not huge about it, but the last time he finished a game in the minus column was January 3rd, so it's been quite a long time when it comes to that. And the goal scoring, 4 goals over his last 6 and scoring last 6 games and still scoring in a variety of ways. The last game on Saturday was a power play marker. He just let go of a quick wrister from the point through traffic that found the net. And he's actually scored like that a couple of times this year. And I really like him in that spot on the man advantage at playing the point. And whenever he becomes a full-timer in Vancouver, I hope he sticks on the blue line. It'd be so neat to see him play with Quinn Hughes, because we've seen Lekromäki like on the flank, playing the bumper at times as well, which I understand. Like, if he gets a clean look in the middle of the ice, there's a good chance it's going to find the back of the net. But if he's in that spot, I feel like he doesn't get the touches that he should get. Like, you want a guy like him and his skill set to have the puck on his stick a lot, if it's not going to be Quinn Hughes, at least. So he's obviously got the big shot, but it's his playmaking and passing that he still feels underrated in his game. He has a very high hockey IQ, and when he does have it at the point, like, he's got a great ability to get pucks through bodies. And that is a skill in itself, to not get a block every time. And that shot of his is special and can get it off in many ways.
Well, one thing he's been
that I've heard about him is he's a pretty quick learner. And when he goes down, when he's played with the Canucks and come back, he's really taken the guidance to heart and really worked on those things. That just kind of shows the determination to go along with the work ethic, right?
Yeah, exactly. He's a real quiet kid. He's got a calm demeanor about him. Nothing, like I said, really gets in his cage. And talking to him a few times, interviewing after the game, obviously, like, it's the offensive numbers that stand out, but I want to, like, see how he's feeling about his play away from the puck. And you can just tell he's put in a lot of work in the film room, whether it's with the coaches or bending the ears of the Sedins and in practice and all that. He knows that those types of things need to be sharpened up if he's going to be a full-timer in the National Hockey League, because the offense, it's always going to be there. It's a play in his own end, which I've been really impressed with. That was obviously the big thing coming in, is like, can he handle like the physicality here in North America in the smaller rink? And he's not the biggest guy. He's like, what, a 170? And he's someone that's willing to get to the middle of the ice. He stands in front of the net. He's scored a bunch of rebound goals, tip-ins, all that kind of stuff. And it's just another day in the office when he does put the puck in the back of the net. And I challenge both of you, go look at all of his goals. If he raises his stick at all after he scores, I'll buy you a Coke. He just does not celebrate. And it's just another day in the office. Now that I said it, you will notice that he can score a Game 7 Stanley Cup goal. And I honestly wouldn't put money down that I'd be surprised if he celebrated. Yeah. Like, it's just, he's just that type of guy. Like, he expects to score, and I love that about him.
He's the opposite of Ovechkin in that way, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So there's one player. The last time we talked to RJ, Ryan Johnson, Abbotsford Canucks GM, on the show, I asked him about Ty Mueller, and I couldn't believe the way this guy lit up. I've never heard a GM get so excited to talk about a player that he'd just been asked about. But it's clear that he really likes Ty Mueller as a player. What is so appealing about Ty Mueller as a player? Why has he had such a successful year with the Abbotsford Canucks?
And it's funny, Dan, same thing when you ask Manny Malhotra about him. His eyes kind of light up a bit. He's just been so excellent this season, and another guy that's come in and blown away expectations. And it's common for a guy to kind of turn pro out of college and be in and out of the lineup early on in the season, especially like a mid-round pick like himself. But honestly, he's been one of Manny's most reliable forwards from the start of the season up until this point. And I was glad to see him fill in and take Pettersson's spot in the All-Star Classic, because he's definitely deserved it. He's just like a Swiss Army knife, kind of has the same skill set as a Pia Suter. We've seen him play first-line center, fourth-line right wing. He kills penalties. He's on the power play. He's taking big face-offs. He's out there when the goalie's pulled and they need a goal to tie it. He's out there when the opposition pulls the goalie and they're trying to tie it. He just has such a well-rounded skill set. Takes care of his own end first, which you don't see by a lot of young guys in the American Hockey League. They want to put up some good numbers, but Ty definitely takes a lot of pride away from the puck first. And then on the offensive side, he has a skill to get the job done and put up points and get in the back of the net. He's a kid that works his bag off, and I don't think he's going to fly under the radar for much longer when it comes to top prospects in this franchise right now, because in my opinion, at least, he's well ahead of his development curve and has a game that will one day translate nicely to the NHL level. And a big reason for that is his versatility.
Yeah, and I mean, we were really impressed, and, you know, like Reach said, watching him in training camp in the preseason here in Vancouver, and there's a level of fearlessness in his game, and I think that's the type of way a guy his size also has to be if he wants to play that type of role in the NHL.
Exactly. He's not scared. He'll stand in front of the net. He'll take cross checks, slashes at the back of the leg. He'll be into the corner first to dig out pucks. He's not afraid to mix it up after the whistle, and he's not the biggest guy, but he has a pretty big heart, and that's someone who earned the respect of his teammates pretty early on in the year. And this is another guy where RJ brought him in when his season finished last year at Nebraska Omaha. He's pretty much a black ace for a couple of weeks and going to the playoffs. He didn't suit up in a game, but he was adapted into that pro environment, knew what it took to make it at this level, went back home, had a great summer of training by all accounts, and came in and has been shot out of a cannon. I just keep waiting for him to hit that rookie wall, but he has the type of work ethic where he's not going to rest on his laurels. And again, just a guy that you can just plug and play anywhere. He's such a luxury to have for a guy like Manny Malhotra.
We got a lot of questions about Atu Ratu and his development. He's played 21 games with the big club this year, 31 with Abbey. He's near a point a game, so that's promising. But I do think most Canucks fans would have hoped to see Atu Ratu graduate to being more of a regular NHLer at this point. What development are you seeing in his game over the course of this season?
Yeah, so when you look at his stat line, the points are there. He's tied for the team lead in points with Niels Omon, right? And they both have 30 points apiece. He's frequency at the box score, goals, assists. But when I look at him, I wonder what it will take to be a full-timer, and he knows this. And it's probably going to be a bottom six forward right now, whether that's center or wing. So what I'm focused on when I'm watching Rocky play is his consistency away from the puck. Is that there? Is he dominating the faceoff circle? Is he doing well on the PK? And so far, all year at least, he's proven he can do all those things and has shown that in glimpses in Vancouver. And Coach Tocchet has put him out in different situations early on in the year. But the toughest thing for a young player to do is to be consistent and play the same way every time you get an opportunity in the NHL. And sometimes you just got to sit back and remember, okay, he's only 22 years old. He's still kind of learning the ropes and the AHL and NHL, although he's starting to become more of a veteran presence down in Abbotsford. And I know that a lot of young guys really love being around Ratu, like a guy like Ty Mueller. Mm-hmm. Has learned a lot already from a guy like Atu Ratu, especially in the faceoff circle. And I don't think there's anyone better to learn from than his head coach, Manny Malhotra, who carved out a pretty darn good career as a bottom six center that was reliable in the faceoff dot. I know that's not the sexiest positions to play in the NHL, but someone's got to do it, and you can earn a great living. And I'm not saying that's where Ratu's ceiling is. He's got the skill, I think, to be a top six player one day. But at the end of the day, you got to have a rounded skill set. And he's definitely still honing his craft in the American Hockey League. And hopefully when he gets the call back up to the big club, he'll have the confidence to do his thing out there and hopefully sticks.
Well, there is a lot of competition for that bottom six type of role. And maybe next summer, we could see upwards of two to three of these guys from Abbotsford make the Canucks, because they have so many kind of vying for spots. Because Max Sasson showed well, of course, right? I mean, we spoke about Atu Ratu. Ty Mueller is really impressing. And obviously, even a guy like Archdeep Baines, who's with the big club right now. Like, you know, when you look at next year, how many of these guys do you expect to even see back with the team?
I mean, there could be a good chunk. I mean, we're looking at how many players have played in both Abbotsford and Vancouver this year, and the number's 13. That is a very big number.
Yeah.
So that just goes to show the depth that they have in the organization right now. And you look at the guys that have had a long run up in Vancouver this season. You mentioned Max Sasson was up there for a few months, Atu Ratu, Archdeep Baines, and now he's back up there. Lekker Mäki has had a couple of stints. So there's a lot of internal competition for a full-time position at the NHL level with Vancouver, and Coach Tocchet has shown he's not afraid to put these guys in the lineup and give them some decent minutes. So I know that we've heard it for the last few years now, Rutherford and Alvin praising what's going on in Abbotsford, and rightfully so, and hoping that someone can kind of jump up and grab a full-time spot. And there's still some time this year. Hopefully the Canucks make the playoffs and a few guys can be around that environment, just kind of like what Shelov and Carlson did last season, and hopefully Elias Pettersson sticks and gets to see the game at its fastest pace at playoff time. So the thing about what's happening in Abbotsford as well, there's a lot of players that can play wing or center. So that gives Alvin and Talk a lot of options who they want to bring up. And they've done it a bunch of times. If you're rewarding players who've been playing great in Abbotsford and giving them some looks. So I expect next year's roster, it's still relatively young, one of the youngest in the American Hockey League, to be back and pushing for spots.
Brandon Astle, our guest, Abbotsford Canucks play-by-play. They've got a couple of games this weekend against the Calgary Wranglers on the road, and then returning home next weekend for a lengthy homestand, starting with the San Jose Barracuda on Friday. Now, I know he's up with the big club now, but played a handful of games after the trade from the New York Rangers. What do you make of my guy, Vittorio Mancini?
Oh, I make a lot. I really like this kid's ceiling, and I've been really impressed with what he's shown so far. And he's been half-advertised, Dan. Like, when the trade went down, he was described as a big body that skates well, and he's been exactly that. And I can see why the Rangers were hesitant to let him go. And the one thing I liked about him is when I interviewed him after his first game in Abbotsford, I asked him, like, who's an NHLer that you model your game after? And the popular answers you hear from young guys nowadays is like, oh, Victor Hedman, Roman Josi, maybe toss in some Hughes and McCarr there. But Mancini said Eric Chernak from the Tampa Bay Lightning. So that really caught my attention, and I was really happy to hear that, because I've come on these airwaves in the past beating the drum that every team in the league needs a guy like Chernak on the back end if you want to win a Stanley Cup. And you could throw out the likes of like Nico Mikula, Dmitry Kulikov, who were depth defensemen on Florida last year. And then you got Vegas when they won the Cup, Zach Whitecloud, Nick Hague, those types of defensemen make a living in the trenches. They're so critical for a team's success. And if Mancini turned into any of those guys, I would be over the moon. But the fact of the matter is he skates better than all those guys and he has better offensive instincts. So he's got a really well-rounded skill set. And a big reason for that, he's someone at a young age that played in Sweden for Frölunda for a few years. Mm-hmm. And then he went to Nebraska Omaha to play with Ty Mueller there. And I think being out there on that big ice, you got to be able to skate. There's no question about it. And you got to be skilled as well. And so he really honed his craft there. He's got that in his toolbox. He's still adding to it. And at the end of the day, you got to keep in mind, he's still a rookie in the AHL. And in his five games so far with Abbotsford, Coach Malhotra has thrown him into all types of situations and has had him with different sets of D partners. It was really awesome to see him play with Elias Pettersson. They made the life pretty hard on the opposition for those few games. And Victor has just passed every challenge thrown his way so far. And interested to see where he ends up here.
Well, I remember chatting with you a few weeks back, and you mentioned the way Elias Pettersson has been playing, that you won't be surprised if he plays in the NHL soon and that he's going to have a nice NHL career. And the head coach has been very pleased with Elias Pettersson, keeping him in the lineup and having a lot of good words for him. But it's also given opportunities for more guys down in Abbotsford to play more without Elias and now Mancini going up. So how are those guys doing with opportunities like Kudryavtsev and guys like Cole McCord?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Kirill, because I think it's safe to say, like, we're probably just coming out of the dog days of the season. Like, the stress from January to here to the end of February can be tough, especially for, like, a young guy like Kirill, who just turned 21 a few weeks ago and playing pro for the first time. But he's played the same way the entire season. His consistency has been impressive, and his build is more of an offensive guy. And up until a few weeks ago, he led the defense in scoring, but right now the points aren't exactly piling up for him. But that's fine, because his defensive effort is there. And he told me earlier this season he takes a lot of pride at being a solid two-way defenseman. He actually thought he might start in the ECHL this year. So I don't know how high his expectations were. So he's just blown those out of the water. And like you said, with Mancini and Pettersson up, it's been an opportunity for others to step in. And Kudryavtsev, who unfortunately was a victim of the numbers game, wasn't necessarily due to his play as to why he was sitting in the press box. It's just the numbers game. He's kind of in. He's been in on a lineup a little bit this year, but nothing too crazy. So it's nice to see him get an elevated role right now. And someone that has been forgotten a little bit has been Cole McCord. I really love Cole's game. I think it's very transferable to the NHL level. He's having a career season already. He does a lot of things well. He just played in over his 100th AHL game a few weeks ago. Skates well, moves the puck. He's physical. He's smart. He angles well. He can play defense. He can play on the power play. And I know when he first turned pro, he got a look in Vancouver, scored his first NHL goal. And he's just been working quietly down in Abbotsford. I really like this kid's upside. So I look at those two to take the ball and run with it, with Pettersson and Mancini up right now.
Hey, Brandon, really appreciate the time and the insights. Thanks for this.
No worries. Always a pleasure. Take care, boys.
There he is, Brandon Astle, Abbotsford Canucks play-by-play, with a lot of good insight on what's been happening down in Abbey.
He's great. Great call, too. A lot of enthusiasm. Yeah. Very smart, very sharp. Always fun chatting with Brandon.
Really likes Vittorio Mancini, so, you know, it's good to know.
Yeah. Reach is just like, I told you.
I'm in.
I noticed he called him Victor, though. Victor. Didn't do the Vittorio.
Didn't do Vittorio. One note, scouts watching Carolina Buffalo. Vancouver is among them.
Are we going to do the
scout watch season,
thing?
Baby.
Carolina Buffalo?
Yeah.
So they're watching Mikko Rantanen?
Or Dylan Cousins.
Or Dylan Cousins. Or Bo Byram. Made a really Paige bad Thompson? Mistake in one of the goals scored for Carolina. Mikko Rantanen getting cured by the Buffalo Sabres. Shocker. He's got a couple of points already for Carolina in that game. So, look, we're not the biggest fight fans. I get that. But, like, who do you think won the big fight at Starbucks between Jordan Schultz and Ian Rappaport?
I haven't seen the video of it.
I don't think
there's video of it. I haven't seen
there's
it.
No video.
Yeah, I heard
I
about
can
it.
Just imagine, like, 5'5", Ian Rappaport, the rap sheet, just going up against Jordan Schultz, fighting over who had the right bit of news on Tom Brady and Matthew Stafford at some luxury ski resort.
Is this what it was about?
Yes.
This is so stupid. I don't even know what happened. I just heard, like, these guys get into it. I'm like, who cares? Like,
oh, it's funny.
You know, I know, but I just thought to myself, I'm like, why are they getting into it? Like, who? Like, what can be so mad at somebody about to confront them over Twitter?
This would be like CJ and Elliot Friedman, Chris Johnson versus Elliot Friedman or something.
Yeah, it's just like, again,
I would still enjoy watching it.
Like, over reporting
celebrity boxing match.
Like I get maybe if somebody says something really nasty about somebody or whatever, mm-hmm. but if it's like about a reporting or something that rubbed you the wrong way, like you're gonna go make a big scene in public over it? Like, are you for real?
Apparently it was enough for Jordan Schultz to get angry with Ian Rappaport.
So Schultz got angry with Rapp.
Who's according to Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk.
Okay, who do you think benefits the most from this news?
Probably Jordan Schultz, I guess.
I think so.
Schefter.
Adam Schefter is, I guess. I'm not the jerk.
The content has been pretty funny, though. Like, all the different NFL reporters in Indy now, they're like, got to be safe. Went to Dunkin' Donuts today.
Staying away from Starbucks.
Staying away from the Starbies. All right, Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah coming up. We're going to get to Landon Ferraro, our Thursday analyst, his take on where the Canucks game is at, how they are finding ways to stay in games with their defensive play. And when will the offense come around, if ever? It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, Canucks Central.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Vancouver sports fans. Halford and Brough in the morning. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on Canuck Central. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Since we are still on Scout Watch, producer Josh has just informed me that there is a scout set to attend the Jets Predators in Nashville tonight.
Canuck Scout?
Yeah.
So yeah, we have the Scout Network out there.
They're one of the teams trying to work on the dual Shen trade, maybe. Probably not.
Probably. I always find the stuff about scouts really interesting.
Yes,
because scouts are always at games.
Always at games,
right? Like that's their job. It's funny. Their job is to be at games.
It's basically like Panda Watch, but Scout Watch.
Scout Watch, yeah. And I mean, and sometimes it is telly.
Yes,
right. But generally speaking, like sometimes it's funny to be like, oh, this scout is at this game. It's like that scout's at every game because he scouts in the region and he's always at the games. Like there are scouts in Vancouver from certain teams that are always in Vancouver.
Always.
And there was like, they have a scout from here. It's like, well, he's always here.
Yes. Yeah, he's always there. Let's bring in our next guest. He is here always on Thursdays. It is Landon Ferraro, Canucks analyst. Thanks for this, Landon. How are you?
Doing pretty good, guys. How you doing?
We're doing well. Getting ready for another game of low event hockey. That's the name of the Canucks brand right now.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, they get the great win last night, but it almost looks like they're trying to have as few shots as possible just to make it extra tough.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, all three games they played since the break, it took over 7 minutes to get their first shot on goal, right? And the thing is, as long as you find ways to win hockey games, that's all that matters. But can they live with margins that fine?
Not consistently, no. I mean, the past few, you know, one of those was a lot of penalty trouble in the first bit, so they literally just didn't have the puck to get a shot. But no, like it's not something that, you know, you hear the guys talking like, yeah, we're really trying to limit our shots for tonight. But at the same time, like, you know, it goes back to what Tocchet has been preaching for, you know, quite a while now of like, you need to get to the inside. You can't make the extra pass that, you know, still is there for a lot of guys.
Yeah. And there's, they get Quinn Hughes back last night, and for as much as he missed a month, he's still the best player on the ice, even if he did look a little bit rusty coming off the shelf. And they're looking like they're going 11-7 again tonight for the game against the Anaheim Ducks. But, you know, you get Quinn back and immediately you just have so much more confidence in what they're able to do as a group and how much more it adds to them as a team, because yeah, they might be a one man team at times, but you know, you shouldn't apologize for having one of the few best players in the league, right?
No, definitely not. But you know, what it does also is, you know, you can see everyone, like he gets back in and everyone is looking to get him the puck again. And when he has it, you can really see guys working to get open because they know if they do their part, Hughes is going to do his. He's going to get the puck on your tape in a spot for you to score. So, you know, it kind of gets everyone else back excited. But it also, you know, just like any team, you get your best player back. And, you know, it's a bit of relief. You're like, okay, like, you know, we got our ace of spades back. Like, we've got a chance here. It doesn't feel like everyone else has to have, you know, brilliant nights to make it work.
No, and it's just about being able to meet a higher baseline in general. And I think it's very clear that this is going to be a low-scoring hockey team that's going to have to play good defense. And it's only one game with Quinn Hughes back. Well, what did you make of what the blue line looked like? You know, I know it was seven defensemen, but with Quinn Hughes back, having the other guys slot in, what do you think of the strength of their blue line?
Honestly, like watching it, I actually kind of like the 11-7 look with, you know, for the Canucks with, you know, what they have up front, it's not, you know, and I mean no disrespect, but at the same time, you're not losing a ton by going one less. But what it does for that group is you really get to spread those minutes around. You can use guys heavy, and, you know, if a PK comes up, you can use, you know, Myers and Forberts and Hronik a ton and really get them moving. And then when the power plays back, well, you know, Quinn's going to be out there for 2 minutes, and then you can kind of keep spreading it. For how this team's built, and like you just said, like it looks like it's going to have to be a lot of low-scoring games. If you can have that extra defenseman, it does make a difference.
Yeah, and it looks like they'll go that way again tonight. Myers took the puck to the net, so we'll see what happens there when we get closer to puck drop in a little under about 2 hours' time here on Sportsnet 650. Landon Ferraro, our guest, and you know the forward group is. It lacks a little bit of punch right now, as we've talked about so much this year. But the point I was making earlier in the show is it feels like Rick Tocchet knows what he has, or he has a good sense of what he has right now. You know, Pettersson is more like a guy who's playing good defensive hockey, but not generating a ton at the offensive end. Pugh Suter, I mean, he's about as reliable and consistent a player as there is in the National Hockey League. And now Philip Hedl is your most dynamic forward. And it feels like he's got a very good sense of what he's got, and he's deploying his three centermen in that way.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, he's just kind of being honest with himself. And I'm sure that coaching staff have had a ton of discussions. And you're obviously, you're trying to get guys going, and you're trying to make, you know, the right moves, but at the same time, you need to win games, and you get the right feel, and you're right, like, Hedl has been the most dynamic offensively, and, you know, as soon as Garland got moving, and you could see he had, you know, a little extra jump last night, like, he starts to find a more ice time, and you find what's working that night, and you have to be able to adapt to, you know, when something's not working, shift from it and find that new mix that might give you a goal when you need it. And Tocchet seems to be, you know, obviously he knows these players very well and is comfortable making those decisions, and, you know, it's paying off. You know, it did last night, I should say.
It certainly did. And, you know, it was kind of funny because as good as Connor Garland had been earlier this year, he's been as cold as everybody else the last little while. And we were talking yesterday, and I was maybe being a bit overly critical of Garland, and he pulls up and scores a goal on the power play and scores a game winner in overtime. But as far as the way he was able to get his shots on, and you know, he's obviously been pretty effective overall so far, but the amount of space he was able to find, I think, was a byproduct of having some more speed on his line.
For sure. And, you know, for Garland, like, yes, he can be that, you know, lower level, like, bottom six line driver when you need him, because he is just, he's an endless engine. But when you get him some pieces to work with, like, you know, he has the ability to do what he did at the beginning of the year, and that's score goals. And you know, his overtime one is a perfect example, though, of just shooting the puck, right? Like, that wasn't the hardest shot that goalie's seen tonight or this entire year. But he takes his ice into the middle. As soon as Quinn drops it, he doesn't stop moving his feet. As soon as he gets it, he cuts to the middle and he drives in, and then he takes his shot. Like, he doesn't second-guess himself. There was no other option in his mind. And now you've put the goalie in a position of essentially a one-on-one. Like, it's you against him. He has to make the save, and he didn't. Right? Like, you have to give yourself a chance for the goal to go, or for the goal to happen. If he tries to look for another play, there's no chance.
Yeah, and the Canucks need that from Garland. He's been pretty consistent all year and been drying up a little bit the offense lately. But maybe this new group with Hedl, Garland, and Joshua has some juice. I know they scored on the power play and overtime, but it just felt like those two wingers sort of worked well off of Hedl's speed. And I wonder, like, I kind of wonder what it looks like if they're able to build a little bit of more chemistry together.
Yeah, and I think the important thing there is Dakota Joshua. And, you know, like last night was about as close to what we've, you know, to what we're used to seeing out of him. And it looked like he had his legs and he was involved. And you know, it looked pretty good. And all of a sudden, like, you get him back closer to, you know, to normal. And all of a sudden you have a, you know, a big, strong forward that can buy some more ice for Garland, can open up some space for Hedl as he's moving around the offensive zone. Joshua can, you know, plant in if he needs help in the corner, he can plant in and help him get that puck back and things like that. Like, that line makes sense just off of those two moving and Joshua being, you know, the heaviness.
Yeah, and I think Dakota Joshua's game has really quietly come around the last little while. I thought last night he was really impressive with his stick work, especially not only in the offensive zone on the forecheck, digging pucks out, but also defensively and through the neutral zone. If he can continue playing this way, like, the type of impact a guy his size can make, it is pretty substantial. Like, we saw he got the secondary assist, but it just felt like he made a lot of winning plays last night.
Yeah, and timing-wise, like, if he starts, you know, really kind of being at this level, you know, more consistently, which, you know, it makes sense. Like, you know, he went through a lot this past summer. He missed a lot of the first part of the season. He comes back, gets hurt again, comes back again. Like, it seems like he's starting to get some momentum under his feet now. And timing-wise, like, it's almost like you're bringing in a player at the deadline. Like, that's a massive add for the Canucks. Like, how many times this year, other than, you know, talking about speed, but up front, like, just finding a forward that can get in on the forecheck and hold on to a puck and really protect it. Like, it's, unless you have that size and strength, it's really hard to do. You got to keep moving your feet, but sometimes the best play is just to eat the puck in the offensive zone and wait for your help to come in, or as you're looking around, waiting for a lane to open up before you move out of it. But that's what a, you know, a big body allows you to do.
It's funny, Nils Höglander gets on the score sheet after getting the bump up to play with Elias Pettersson and Jake DeBrusk, but it happens to come when he's sticking out there for a shift with the fourth line. So it doesn't end up coming alongside Elias Pettersson. But his game's really been coming lately. It just feels like he's got a little bit more of that buzzsaw in him that Rick Tocchet wants to see out of Nils Höglander.
Yeah, and I felt like, you know, for the couple weeks leading up to the Four Nations break that, you know, I felt like his game was really coming along. Like, earlier in the year, you know, take out the penalty trouble that he was having, because it was every forecheck, every game seemed to be a hook or a tripping penalty. But you take that out, and it seemed like, you know, that engine just was almost like at half full. Like, he'd go for a big burst up the ice, and then he was kind of done for the rest of the shift. Like, his conditioning seems like it's back. He's able to, you know, stay into the shift a lot longer, hunt pucks and stay on top of it. And that's the type of player, when he's on his game, like, that's what he does. And then, you know, to see him finally really make a play, like, that was all him. And, you know, he makes a beautiful play and a great shot. And it's nice to see, like, that's more confidence for him. Hopefully he can take another jump. Like, you know, if he can add a few more goals down the stretch here, like, that's almost found money again, considering his first half.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And I think when you look at what the Canucks need as far as somebody being a spark plug, he really brought that last night, and hopefully that carries over here tonight as well. And, you know, on the forward group too, I don't know if I love having Besser on a line on his own, but it's kind of where we find ourselves with this team, right? Because of the type of forwards you need, not to say somebody has to be sacrificed, but it's difficult to find all the skilled guys in top six spots to be put together without finding the traits that are necessary. You know what I mean? Like, that's been the struggle. They're trying to find the duos here right now outside of a couple of guys up front.
Yeah, well, I mean, the tough one for Besser there is, and not, you know, just keep bringing it back to the same guy, but without Pettersson skating the way that, you know, we know that he can, and when he's fully healthy or whatever is going on, it now makes it pretty tough to have him and Besser on the same line trying to generate offense. Like, Besser, you know, like, the skating part isn't really part of Besser's game. It's his is, you know, he's good in a straight line, but to having to be quick and recovering on pucks or, you know, bringing it through the neutral zone, like, that's not what he's really meant to be doing. Like, he's a trigger man. He's there for being in the offensive zone. He's good on a cycle because he's heavy on pucks, but when he gets that one chance, he can score, right? And but at the same time, if you have two guys that aren't, you know, jumping to the corners very quickly to get back on pucks, like, it makes retrievals tough, and now all of a sudden that line doesn't work. So, you know, for Besser, like, you put him, you know, you have O'Connor that's got a ton of speed and Suter that, you know, has been playing good hockey. Like, can you find a way to make another line go? It's an interesting situation, but, you know, like, we're, you know, it's been a little bit here of, like, everything's a chain reaction. Like, because of one thing, it messes up the next thing, which messes up the next.
Yeah, and, you know, Besser's obviously in a real interesting spot right now. We are just over a week away from the trade deadline. You know, he spoke to Ian McIntyre the other day, reiterated how much he wants to stay, you know, let us in and let us know that he's frustrated that nothing's got done yet. And Canucks are trying to hold firm on a lower term, and Besser obviously wants a little bit more. But I guess the situation for a team that's, you know, hanging on to a playoff spot right now, can you afford to trade one of your top goal scorers for a team that is among the lowest scoring teams in the league already? It makes for a really awkward situation, Landon.
Yeah, but I mean, to me, I think it boils down to a pretty simple solution, though. Like, the management team and coaching staff have had their discussions. Like, you know, I found it always amusing for the past, you know, couple months here of saying, like, you know, they're still looking at it, still looking at the situation, like they haven't watched him for years and years. Like, they know exactly what they have in Brock Besser, but as you're calling around and as calls are coming in, you listen to everything that's there, because, you know, by this point, you know exactly what he wants, and you know where you're standing as, you know, as the management group. So it's now just, if any of the offers coming in, does it make your team better in the future? Because, you know, I guess the first conversation, though, is, do you believe this team can win a Stanley Cup? Mm-hmm. With Besser here and whatever you bring in, do you truly believe it can win a cup? Or are you just trying to get yourself into the first round of the playoffs and that's going to be good enough? Because past that, now you're just looking at, does this make us better down, you know, into next season? And if it doesn't, then you hold on to him and you try and work it from there. But, you know, it doesn't have to be anything more than that. I think it's really going to kind of play itself out behind closed doors, I should add.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's going to be interesting here. Like I've been mentioning, I wouldn't be surprised I think the Canucks and Besser will be at least talking here before the deadline and make one final push, and we'll see ultimately where it goes. You know, final one for me, though, I did want to get your thoughts on the Canucks penalty kill, because I think that was maybe one of the real storylines for this team the last little while. They've been red hot coming out of the break, but even before that, they've been good, especially since the trades, and last night came up with a huge penalty kill in overtime. Now, obviously, the Kings' power play is not exactly the greatest, but the Canucks are really inching up there. How much of this do you attribute to their personnel, but especially a guy like Marcus Pettersson, who so far, I don't think he's been on the ice for a goal against on the PK so far.
Yeah, like I was going to put it to Pettersson for the most part, right? Like, you know, the Bluger Suter up front are, you know, they're a very solid PK unit, and Myers is a good PKer. Phil Hronek and Forbert are good, but what Pettersson, by coming in, he was, you know, was able to do is give you those two solid pairs on the back end between Forbert and Hronek on the other unit, and Pettersson and Myers playing together, and like it just gives you that, you know, that more depth. But it also gave you a guy that is tall. He's very good with his stick. He's very good at being in the lane, and he's a good skater, so He's able to gap up on entries. He's able, when there's a loose puck, to chase after it. He can be hard on a player in the corner. Like, you know, he's added a real big piece to this team. But again, like, it doesn't make anyone have to double shift out of it, or put, you know, make Carson Soucy have to play right now, or, you know, anything like that. Like, it just gives you those four solid guys to kill a penalty.
Landon, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for this.
All right, let's watch 12 goals in tonight, eh?
We're betting the over. Thanks for this, Landon.
Have a good one.
There he is, Landon Ferraro, joining us here on Canuck Central. And it might be a spot to look at the over. I know the Canucks are maybe the most low-event team in the league, and Anaheim's been shutting it down a little bit lately as well. But you have the Canucks on the second half of a back-to-back, and you have Anaheim coming back from, I know, like, they were not the longest road trip considering it was the Four Nations face-off, but they were playing in Buffalo the other night. So coming off a Eastern back to the West sort of movement, and now they're back home. So maybe it's a little bit more of a loose game than maybe we anticipate.
Yeah, it could very well. I think the Canucks in general, I think it's going to come down to goaltending.
Yeah,
tonight, because even if you look at the couple games, we didn't love how they played at parts of the Vegas game, but they were good in the third period. Didn't love how they played against Utah, but they still won. They gave up some against Utah, especially in the third. But in general, they didn't give up a lot. So they've been pretty good at not giving a ton. That third period last night was really when it happened. But even so, like, it wasn't like it was like they had 10 high danger chances or anything. The Kings, they just had a couple and they scored on a couple.
Yeah. It was, I don't know. The Kings turned it up to a notch that the Canucks really had a tough time matching in the third period last night.
Well, Adrian Kempe was an animal. He played 26 minutes too, and he's a forward.
You remember when Pettersson used to like break into the offensive zone and just rip pucks back past goalies? That was fun.
Yeah. Like, the eye roll from Sat there. Holy. Yeah.
Well, it's just
exasperated sigh.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. Like, just speaking as a hockey fan. And somebody who's watched the Canucks so much the last number of years.
I hear you.
I can't help but think, like, when Kempe scored that goal last night, I'm like, I can't lie to you. Like, my first thought was, like, remember when Pettersson used to do that?
Let's just hope it comes back.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say. Let's just hope it.
I know we're all tired of that conversation.
It's no, just, I know.
These are the real thoughts that go through my head while watching the game.
Somebody was like calling me out last night. They're like, well, you always say you're tired of talking about Pettersson, so don't talk about him.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I'm trying.
Like, then Rage brings it up again.
What am I supposed to do? But no, it's one of those things. Like again, last night, it was one of those games. Like, it was like the ink blot test. you saw what you wanted to see. If you wanted to see some positives, you could. If you wanted to see all trash, you saw all trash. Yeah. It's really what you wanted to perceive out of the performance last night, right? Which is very much what Pettersson's performances have been. Some good moments, a lot of good things defensively.
I feel like there's been more flashes.
Yeah,
lately.
Sure.
But
yeah,
we'll see.
Again, like,
you saw what you wanted to see.
I'm trying to be positive. Nathan MacKinnon, first player to 90 points this year. He's 90 in 60 games, 67 assists on the year. I would say, like, and we've talked about this, we joked about it during the Four Nations a little bit. There is no scarier player in the league to be playing against right now than Nathan MacKinnon. At least just from, like, just you're watching the game, you're cheering for your team, and, like, Nathan MacKinnon comes onto the ice and you're, like, immediately, like, oh, boy, this uneasy feeling comes over you.
Right now,
yeah,
he's the best player in the league.
Yeah.
McDavid is having some struggles.
Admittedly, McDavid is, even by his own admission, yes, having struggles.
This is just about form. McDavid is still the guy at the top of the pyramid. But
if
based
you were doing
on
a
form,
fantasy draft of, like, all players in the league are available, who are you taking first overall? It's still McDavid.
Yeah, but if you're ranking the best, currently the best players in the league, who's performing the best? Nathan MacKinnon right now is the best player in the league.
Yeah, he'd win the Hart Trophy.
Yeah,
I think so. Speaking of McDavid, he commented with Mark Spector today at Sportsnet.ca about his struggles. The year hasn't gone the way I would have loved it to, personally, but we're not after personal success, said McDavid, who is on pace to finish 4 goals, 34 assists, and 38 points, shy of last year's total. I wish I was playing better. I wish I had played better all year. That's Connor McDavid. who still has 73 points in 53 games.
Yeah, it's still, I mean, still going to have 100 points. But
I'm struggling, but I'm going to score 100 points.
Yes. I mean, we all wish our struggles would be yes. so good, right? But I think it's clear, though, because McDavid, when he's on, he's at a different level. How much do you think it's, I want to say disappointment of losing the Stanley Cup, but it's like you realize how hard it is and long the season is.
Yeah.
You just came off a 7-game series in the Cup final.
Yeah.
And then you go to the Four Nations, you go off the high of that, back to regular season. Part of me just kind of wonders if he just wants to get to the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a grind. There's a lot of hockey. Lots happened.
But he didn't, like, he was bad in the final of the Four Nations. Like, he couldn't handle the puck.
No, I know, but he scored the
goal. And then he scored the goal. I know. But, like, if you were just, like, if he doesn't score that goal, if somebody else scores it, right?
But you know what?
You're coming away. If Jordan Binnington doesn't make that save on Austin Matthews, the narratives around McDavid would have been wild.
Well, I mean, you know what's interesting about that? Because if you go back to 2010, Sidney Crosby had the golden goal.
Yeah.
He didn't have a great tournament, though.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't bad, but he wasn't, like, the Canada's best forward was Jonathan Toews.
Yes.
In 2010.
Yeah.
In that tournament, at the very least, right?
And it led to a lot of people having the take of, like, I'd take Toews over Crosby right now.
Yeah. Which
that was silly.
That's silly. I mean, Toews.
Were you old enough to remember those takes?
Yeah.
Because Toews went on to win, you know, 3 Stanley Cups.
I had friends that were like, I'd take Toews over Crosby. And I was like, shut up, man.
Kids in kindergarten. You're in the sandbox talking about this.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was really big in the Montessori. Yeah.
This was the recess chat.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
Because we were playing foot hockey.
That was in daycare.
Yeah.
We were arguing.
Yeah.
Hockey cards. But yeah, I mean, so. I get what you mean, but I just wonder how much of that is... I mean, that's what you're hoping for if you're an Edmonton fan, right? That McDavid hasn't lost a little bit of mojo. But it's funny. It's like McDavid losing mojo. It's like we're talking about Quinn coming back from the injury. He's merely an all-star level as opposed to Hart Trophy level.
He's still the best player on the... Well, I mean, because he's Leon Draisaitl's his teammate. So he's not always the best player on the ice.
No.
In that sense. But like last night, Quinn Hughes doesn't look like he's fully on his game. He's still the best player on the ice from either team.
Well, so if you look at it from the pyramid, so to speak, right? Like Quinn Hughes is like near the top of the NHL pyramid.
Yes.
So he's clearly at the top of the Canucks pyramid. But then like they're missing like 4 levels to the next guy, you know, like there's a precipitous fall to the next guy. Like, so
it's a large fall.
Is the Canucks next? Who's the Canucks next best player right now based on form?
This is a remake of the movie Anatomy of a Fall.
I haven't watched that movie yet.
It was good. Actually.
Was it actually good?
It was pretty good.
This is very, 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 very good.
Is it very? Okay, I gotta watch it. There's a dog involved, right? So I have to watch it.
There's a dog.
I gotta watch it.
There's a 50 Cent song that you wouldn't expect.
It's really?
Yes.
It's like Many Men or something.
You'll find out.
All right.
It's a good movie.
I want to watch it now. But
this is the Canucks context of it.
The Canucks. Who's the corpse? Like, what are we doing here?
Let's not go there.
Let's not go there. But yeah, who's the Canucks' next best player? I mean, it should be Pettersson, right?
It should be.
But we were talking about Filip Hedl, but realistically, Hedl's not even an all-star. He hasn't proven that yet, right? Mm. Who's the next all-star the Canucks have?
Roenick,
right? Besser last year was an all-star.
Yep. Canucks had a lot of all-stars last year.
For sure. But Besser, on the pyramid of great hockey players, what is he, like, how many levels down is he?
He's like a...
Like, what, fifth tier player? Fifth tier? And that's not
like
a bad thing.
He's like a fourth or fifth tier player, yeah.
That's like, you know, because you're talking about at the very top, you know, you go through it. And that's where the Canucks pyramid is, right? Like, you're kind of missing levels 2 to 4.
Yeah.
Now, no team's going to have players in each step of the pyramid because...
You thought you had a tier one player and a tier two player, but now...
Even Thatcher Demko at his best, Vezina level. You talk about, okay, tier two, tier three. You had JT at his best. You know, he could be a tier three player.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the top two or three or four tiers in the league, you had one representative.
Yeah.
And that's what made you excited about the core. Like, okay, they have problems. There are issues with this team. But when you have these types of players, you want to give it a chance to see what you can do with it. And it's just been injury and JT no longer here.
We will continue to talk about this. Get to some of your texts at 650. Pregame is coming up at 6 o'clock. Also, you'll hear the comments of Rick Tocchet speaking ahead of puck drop on the second half of a back-to-back Canucks in Anaheim tonight. You're listening to Canucks Central.
Let's just hope it comes back.
Yeah.
Hope is a dangerous thing. Hope can drive a man insane.